Okay, stop what you're doing. You have to hear this one because I'm still buzzing from it. I'm Ramp. This is Ramp Check on Radio Hanger, and today I'm taking you somewhere you cannot drive to. You can't hike to it easily. There's no road, there's barely a trail. The only sensible way in is wings. Let me take you there. It's called the Mile High Strip, deep in the Idaho backcountry, up in the Chamberlain Basin country, tucked into the Frank Church River of No Return wilderness. And I'm not kidding when I tell you this is one of the most talked about, most respected, most quietly feared little runways in all of American aviation. Pilots plan for it for years, years, and when they finally do it, they don't stop grinning. I get to tell you why. But first, real quick, because these folks make what I do possible. Today's segment is brought to you by aviationsoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every step of the journey. First solo, private pilot, instrument, all the way up, mark the milestones that matter. And listen, if there was ever a flight worth a coin on the shelf, it's your first trip into the Idaho backcountry. Every coin tells a story. aviationsoul.com. All right, come with me. Picture a canyon, steep walls, timber climbing up both sides, a creek down in the bottom, running cold and fast, and carved into the side of the mountain on a shelf of ground that tilts uphill. There's this ribbon of dirt and grass. That's it. That's the runway. About 1,200 feet of it, give or take, sitting up around 5,800 feet above sea level. Now, here's the thing that makes every pilot's stomach do a little flip. It's one way in, one way out. You land uphill, you take off downhill. Every single time, it doesn't matter which way the wind is blowing, it doesn't matter what you prefer. The mountain decides, and the mountain already decided a long time ago, and there is no go around. Let that sit for a second. On a normal runway, if your approach goes sideways, you push the throttle up, you climb away, you come back around and try again. That's the safety valve. That's the thing every student pilot drills 100 times at Mile High. That valve does not exist. Once you drop below the rim and commit to that final approach, you are landing. The canyon wall is right there in front of you. You cannot outclimb it. You cannot turn around inside it. You made your decision way back up high, and now you're living with it. This is incredible, and it's terrifying. And that is exactly why pilots love it. Let me tell you what the approach actually feels like, because I got to ride along, and I have not fully calmed down since. You come in high over the basin, beautiful up there. Green ridgelines rolling out forever, not a road, not a power line, not a single straight line made by a human being anywhere you look. And then your pilot starts setting up, and everything gets very deliberate, very quiet. Airspeed nailed, flaps out. You slow it down to just above a walk, just above the stall, hanging there on the edge, and then you tip over the rim and drop into the slot. The walls come up around you. Suddenly, the sky isn't everywhere anymore. It's just a strip above your head, and the timber is sliding past both wingtips and the runway. That little uphill smear of grass is dead ahead, and it looks impossibly short. Your brain is screaming that you're too low, too slow, too committed. And then the ground rises up to meet you because it's tilted uphill, remember? So the earth comes to catch you. The uphill slope acts like a giant brake. You touch down and the hill just soaks up your speed, pulls you to a stop way faster than you'd believe, and you roll out and you shut it down and it's dead silent, except for the creak and the ticking of a hot engine. And you just sit there for a second. You have to, nobody talks, you just breathe. You have to see this. Now, who lands here? Who chooses this? Because this is not a runway for a rental Cessna 172 on a Sunday afternoon. This is specialized flying. This is the world of the backcountry airplane, and oh, do I love these machines. The airplane you see most out here is the Piper Super Cub, the PA-18, that gorgeous little yellow tail dragger with the big fat tundra tires and the wing that just does not want to quit flying. A well-set-up Super Cub can get in and out of Mile High and make it look almost casual, floating over the trees at a crawl. Big soft tires kissing the grass. These airplanes are built for exactly this: big flaps, low stall speed, huge tires to soak up the rough ground. Some of them are stripped down so light and built up so strong, they'll be flying at 40-something miles an hour and still have plenty in reserve. And then you've got the newer breed, the Cub Crafters Carbon Cub, the Kit Fox. The RAND's purpose-built backcountry airplanes with monster horsepower for their weight and short field performance that would have seemed like science fiction 50 years ago. You'll see the odd bush-modified Cessna 180 and 185 out here, too. Big, brawny tail draggers that have been hauling people into these strips since the 1950s. But here's what I really want you to understand. The airplane matters. Sure, the airplane is beautiful, but this kind of flying isn't about the machine. It's about the person up front and the years they put in to earn a place like this. Because you don't just wake up one morning and fly into Mile High. I talked to a bunch of these backcountry pilots, and there's a phrase that kept coming up over and over: mountain flying training, before anybody takes an airplane into a strip like this. They go get real instruction from people who've spent their whole lives in these canyons. They learn how the wind pours over a ridge and tumbles down the far side. They learn about density altitude, how on a hot summer afternoon at 5,800 feet, your airplane thinks it's way higher than it is, and your engine and your wings both get lazy right when you need them most. They learn to read canyons, to always leave themselves an out, to never fly up a drainage they can't turn around in. And then, and this is the part I love, they practice. They go do it with an instructor who knows mile high cold over and over until the decision making is baked in, until committing to that final approach isn't a leap of faith, it's just the natural end of a plan that started 10 miles back. One older gentleman I met out there, silver mustache, hands like a mechanic, he's been flying these Idaho strips for something like 40 years. And I asked him if he still gets nervous going into mile high. And he looked at me and he said, if the day I stop respecting this place ever comes, that's the day I quit flying it.
Respect?
He said, not fear, respect. I got chills. I still have them, honestly, because that's the whole culture out here in a sentence. This is not cowboy flying. The movies get it so wrong. The real backcountry pilots are the most careful, most disciplined, most conservative aviators you will ever meet. They have to be. There's no radar out here. No tower. No control. Nobody's coming to bail you out. The mountain does not grade on a curve, so the people who fly it well are the ones who've made humility a habit. Let me back up and give you a little history, because this strip and all these Idaho strips have a story.
A lot of these backcountry airstrips go back to the miners and the homesteaders and the early Forest Service, way back to the 1920s and 30s. People carved out flat ground wherever they could because an airplane was the only practical way to reach these places. No roads were ever coming. And the airplane changed everything. It brought in supplies, it brought in people, it hauled out anybody who got hurt. And Idaho did something really special. The state and the Forest Service and a whole army of volunteers have fought for decades to keep these strips open. There's a group, the Idaho Aviation Association, and folks like them. They organize work parties, they fly in with shovels and rakes and weed whackers, and they mow the grass and fill the squirrel holes and cut back the encroaching brush and paint the markers by hand because they love these places and they refuse to let them disappear. That's what gets me every time a Super Cub touches down at Mile High. It's landing on ground that somebody, some volunteer, gave up a weekend to maintain. This whole backcountry network only exists because generation after generation of pilots decided it was worth the sweat. There's something really beautiful in that. Now let me paint you the reward, because I've been telling you about the danger and the discipline, but oh, the payoff. You shut down at one of these strips and you step out and the air smells like pine and warm dust and cold water. You hear the creek, you hear the wind in the timber, and maybe a hawk somewhere overhead. And that's it. That's all you hear. No traffic, no phones, because there's no signal. Nothing man-made at all except your own airplane sitting there in the grass ticking as it cools. People fly in and camp under the wing. They fish the creek. They cook dinner on a little stove while the light goes gold and then pink on the canyon walls. And they sit around and tell flying stories, because everybody who made it in there has a story. And everybody understands exactly what everybody else went through to be sitting there.
I watched a dad and his teenage daughter climb out of a Super Cub at a nearby strip. She'd just ridden through one of these approaches for the first time. And her face. I wish you could have seen her face. That mix of, I can't believe we just did that, and can we do it again? That's the good stuff. That's the whole thing right there. That's why these airplanes exist. You have got to come see this. I mean it. Now, I have to say the responsible part, because I'd never forgive myself otherwise, and neither would any of the pilots who trusted me with their stories out there. If listening to this lit a fire in you, and I hope it did, please, please do it right. Do not point a rental airplane at Mile High off the strength of a radio segment and some enthusiasm. Get the training, find a real mountain flying instructor. Idaho has some of the best in the world. Go with someone who knows these strips, who's landed at them 1,000 times, who can teach you where the traps are before you ever go find them yourself. The pilots who make this look easy are the ones who took it the most seriously. Respect the mountain, same word that gentleman gave me, respect. And here's the thing, even if you never fly one yourself, the backcountry belongs to all of us who love airplanes. These strips are a piece of aviation history that's still alive, still being used exactly the way it was meant to be used, kept open by people who care. That's worth knowing about. That's worth celebrating. That's worth a whole segment on a Thursday. And then some big thanks on this one to the pilots of the Idaho Aviation Association and the backcountry flying community who let me tag along and talk their ears off. And to the Forest Service folks who look after this country, and to the Recreational Aviation Foundation who fight to keep strips like this from vanishing. Everything you heard about Mile High came straight from the people who fly it and love it. If you want to see photos of this place, and trust me, you do, because words don't do that canyon justice, head over to RadioHangar.com.
I'm Ramp. That final approach is still playing on a loop in my head, and honestly, I hope it never stops. Go get some training, then go find your canyon.